Hey there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast today. I could not be more honored than to introduce today's guest, who's not really going to need much of an introduction at all because she's been mentioned by many of my previous guests for her information, her inspiration, her incredibly informative blog, and now her new book that's coming out. And she follows my passion for flowers and has written the book she wishes that was there before when she started out over 10 years ago. It's called Florette Farms Cut Flower Garden, Grow, Harvest, and Arrange Seasonal Blooms, which was recently recommended by Jean-Martin Fortier, who I interviewed for my anniversary episode. And he totally recommended it because he got a little preview because he got to write a blurb about it. So, and he wanted to say hi to you. So without any further ado, I'll be quiet. And here is the amazing Erin Benzinkian. So welcome to the show, Erin.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we are very excited because I'm, like I said, lots of my guests have recommended you and I've been a huge follower of your blog and just, you know, you've just inspired, I think, so many of us. You know, listeners to my show have heard a lot about, you know, the chemicals that are put on a lot of flowers and the local, I mean, my husband's a huge, you know, advocate for local food and local flowers and just you are really inspiring and just teaching people. And then this year, I even had some guests who got to attend your workshops last year. And so I was going to be quiet. So go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
Oh, what a nice intro. Okay, so I have a 2-acre flower farm called Florette, and it's about an hour north of Seattle. And we are what we're known for is like squeezing a ton of flowers in a really tiny space. So we're able to grow more like 4 or 5 acres worth of flowers on our 2 small little acres here.
All right. Well, we're probably excited to hear a little bit about how you're pulling that off.
Yeah.
I do always kind of start the show asking about like your very first gardening experience, you know, like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, what do you remember as your first gardening experience? Have you always been a gardener?
Well, my dad was an avid gardener, so I definitely grew up around nature. But when I was little, tiny, like as far back as I can remember, I used to dig up weeds and I would plant them in long, straight rows. My mom remembers, I mean, I wasn't even in kindergarten yet, and I wanted a little plot of land. That's what I always asked for my birthdays, which I never got because we lived in the suburbs. And I would plant little weeds in straight rows. It was almost like I knew what my destiny was way back then.
That's so cute. Yeah. I bet a lot of listeners kind of are having like little flashbacks of doing maybe some of that, but maybe not in straight rows, but like the digging up and transplanting, or at least like picking a daisy, a dandelion or something and putting it somewhere and thinking it was going to grow.
Yep.
So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Was it like your dad that way? Like, did you always know you wanted to go that way or?
Well, when my kids were born, I started paying more and more attention, like when I was pregnant, like what I was putting into my body. And then I had heard about pesticides and then started eating organically and just like that whole world opened up. And so when I started growing my first like garden at my house, my own vegetables and planted an orchard and got chickens and did all those things, I knew that I didn't want to use any chemicals. And just started researching and learning as much as I could. So I read Elliot Coleman's book, The New Organic Grower. It was more of a farming book, but I applied his principles to my vegetable garden. And then as flowers kind of took over my life, I just kept applying those organic principles to everything that I was growing because I don't want to be surrounded by poison and my babies are running around and, you know, playing in the mud. I'm not going to spray chemicals in our yard. So from the beginning, really, from the beginning of my own personal garden, I've always grown organically.
Okay. So do you want to tell us, like, how you ended up, like, with this passion for flowers and a flower farm instead of a vegetable farm? Like, was there something that you, did you always know? I mean, I guess if you were transplanting flowers as a little toddler, is that where it started?
Well, so we left the city. I grew up in the suburbs and then in Seattle. So like I was a city kid, always longing to get out of the city. I wanted to live in the country my whole life. So when my husband Chris and I got married and we had our daughter Alora, I had this really deep, like, strong calling. Like, we have to get out of the city. We got to go now. Like, we've got to leave and need to go put down roots somewhere. So we looked for a little over a year all over and kept getting farther and farther outside the city because we couldn't afford anything in town and farther and farther out. And then we discovered the Skagit Valley, this beautiful place we now call home. And we bought a house with an acre and tilled up a big garden, like a big veggie patch. I planted an orchard. We got chickens. And really, I wanted to have a homestead, which is hysterical now because, like... I'm totally lazy in some ways, so I can't imagine, like, slaughtering my own chickens and all of that. But I really had this, like, idealist.
It sounds dreamy, right?
It totally does, and it's disgusting when you actually do it. We tried, but, and so the more I was, you know, I wanted an heirloom cider orchard and an heirloom chickens, and I tried all these different ideas out for maybe a way that I could, be growing things and be home with my kids, but also start to bring in some income. And flowers really, after a lot of trial and error and testing out a bunch of different ideas, it was when I saw how someone reacted. I delivered a bundle of sweet peas, a $5 jar of flowers, to this woman, and I handed them to her and she smelled them and she just started bawling and told me all these stories about her childhood. And I had childhood memories associated with sweet peas. And so then I started crying. And then like right there standing on her doorstep, we're both crying. And then we give each other a hug. I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, these little tiny blooms had so much power. I wasn't even aware of that. So I came home, tore out most of the vegetables, dug up my orchard, gave it away, got rid of most of the chickens and just planted as many flowers as I could pack into my yard. And then each season after, I just kept getting more and more and more and bigger and took over the neighbor's back field. And it grew from there.
So you took over the neighbor's back field. That's an interesting way to expand. So then, like, are you renting that from them or leasing it or something? Or just,
we're leasing. Yeah, they have. So our house is on 1 acre. So really we have maybe a sixth of an acre. So it's like a very large garden off our back porch. And then there's a 2-acre field that borders our back property. And it was a horse pasture. And then it became a soccer field. And then one day my neighbor's lawnmower broke down and he was so frustrated and really angry and swearing, and his kids weren't playing on the soccer field anymore. So I ran out there with a bunch of cash and begged him to let me rent it. And he said, yes, like I caught him at the right moment. And so then I started tilling up that field and planted more flowers. So in total, we're only growing 2 acres of flowers.
Okay. So my next question, which I frequently ask, is like, so then how did you find your markets? Like, 'cause you're pretty far from town. Like, where do you sell things and how did you get into that part?
The first couple of years, it was a lot of like, what do I want to do with flowers? Do I want to do weddings? I did a weekly flower subscription. I tried out a lot of different things. A lot of them didn't work. People weren't really biting. I was really, really struggling to sell the flowers probably the first 2 or 3 years. I just couldn't make a go of it. I figured out how to grow them, but getting people to take them was a whole other story. And I interviewed this woman for a farming article that I was writing, and she was talking to me about being the face of my business because I'm naturally very shy, very introverted. I would never think of putting myself out there. And she suggested that instead of doing this logo or a business name, that I actually hire a photographer, put on a cute outfit and take pictures of me holding the flowers. I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? There's no way I'm going to do that. But I was desperate. Like, nobody would buy my stuff. And everybody was sort of a little bit panicked when I come into the flower shop. Like, I was a little aggressive with my, like, buy local, buy local. Nobody cared about local. What I didn't realize was people, what they really cared about was our story. Like, as an artisan maker, what they care about is why you do it and who you are. So I changed out all of our like markety material and replaced all the photos of just the flowers of my family and I working with the flowers. And that was the year that it all changed. And really from there, I haven't really had to sell anything since. I just share our story and people totally connect with it.
So where do you sell them though? Like at florists or farmers markets? Do you have a CSA? For some reason, I thought you had a CSA.
Well, we do. So we sell to, I think it's 24 Whole Foods stores now throughout the Pacific Northwest. Our flowers go in boxes to the largest CSA in the country, Full Circle Farm, and they ship our spring blooms. They go up into Alaska, they go to Idaho, California, they go all over. And then we also sell to local wholesalers and local wedding florists. So a lot of places. Like we produce a ton of flowers out of our little tiny farm. But I would say grocery, like natural grocery stores, especially Whole Foods, they've been our biggest customers from day one.
Okay. So then what's the weather like in the Skagit Valley? Like, because I would think like Valentine's, Mother's Day, like for me living in the Rocky Mountains, those would be very hard, times to grow flowers. Is your weather a little milder?
We're more mild for sure. I mean, we have a very wet, cool spring, but Valentine's, there's nothing. I mean, even right now, the daffodils are just poking out of the soil. Like there's nothing going on. So over the years, we've added more and more hoop houses. So now we have 11 hoop houses, and two of those are heated. But really, we haven't forced things out of season. We've just extended our season. So we're usually harvesting by mid-March, we'll be picking anemones and ranunculus from the hoop houses. And then we go all the way through about late October, early November. And that's kind of when we close the farm down. So we try to take a break in the winter, at least from the field and farm work.
Okay. So tell us about something that grew well last year or last season.
Dahlias are always like a huge, beautiful crop for us. So last year we had over 7,000 plants in the field.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm kind of crazy. So I like to plant things in rainbow order for the photos. And so really it went from burgundy all the way, you know, to red, to raspberry, all the way out to white. It was so incredible. So this was our biggest and probably best dahlia season to date. The feeling of standing in the middle of all of that beauty, it's hard to even catch your breath.
Well, your pictures are fantastic. And I was reading on the blog. So is it your husband takes most of the pictures?
He does. Yeah. We've taught ourselves photography. So a lot of the overhead stuff where there's like a big sea of just flower heads, those are the ones I shoot. And then he really shoots everything else. Unless it's a picture with our entire family in it. That's, you know, we brought a photographer in. But yeah, he does all the pictures for our shop and our website. And he's really got quite a talent.
I'll say. So then, but do you do anything like when you take those pictures to like make sure, I mean, it just looks perfect. Like, do you do like special, like, are there any tips or tricks you want to share with listeners about the picture part?
Well, we usually, so for us, we have a really beautiful light here in the valley, but it's so much of it depends on the light. So we don't use any special stuff. We don't do a ton of editing. Occasionally we have to clone out a porta potty in the background because they're so annoying and ugly. There's a bright blue one in the backfield and we always ask the berry guys, please move that. But so he clones that out. But other than that, there's very little editing done. So what we do is we call it magic light hour. It's the last hour of daylight before the sun sets. The sun gets really low on the horizon and all of a sudden everything starts to glow and it gets really sparkly and twinkly. And you'll see that quality in a lot of our photos. So we're either shooting in the early morning as the sun is rising or in the evening as the sun is setting. And that's what gives that really stunning glow. And then we try to put the sun behind the subject. So if I'm standing and Chris is shooting where I'm holding an armload of flowers, we try to have the sun behind me so that it's throwing its light through the blooms and behind me and it creates that kind of, magical glowing quality.
All right. Well, they are just stunning, gorgeous, but a lot of it is just the flowers themselves that you've been growing too. I mean, you guys just the bulk of them, just to see them all together, like it looks like a lot more than 2 acres, or it just looks like
it does. And it goes on
place.
Yeah, it goes on forever. And the berry fields around us, there's rows and rows. So everyone thinks that those are ours as well, but they're not. It just makes it look like we have the biggest farm in the world. But really, we're like this little postage stamp in the middle of all of these huge, gigantic farms all around us.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So how about, is there something you're excited to do different this year or something you're going to try new you haven't done before?
Well, this year, our biggest farm goal, we're going to take on, so we have a small seed company that we started last year, and we're bringing in seeds from our favorite breeders all over the world, and they're like all of my favorite cut flower varieties, ones that are mentioned in the book. But this year, we are taking on the project of like resurrecting the sweet pea. So we have sweet pea seeds from the two best breeders in the world, and we are going to be growing them out here on the farm. So we have 10,000 little seedlings in the greenhouse, and we've been planting this week into the hoops, and then they'll go out into the field later. But we're going whole hog into growing our own seed and saving it out, because importing is getting harder and harder, and there was a world shortage of sweet peas this year due to drought in New Zealand and California, where they're normally grown. So we're going to take on that project, and then growing out some other varieties, starting to dip our toe into that world, and then hopefully a few years down the
I love the way you said, we're just going to dip our toe into that world. And that's where it dropped it.
All right.
So did you want to say anything else about the growing seed, starting your own seeds? And I saw that you have like that blog post you just wrote with like the little like white seed packets with like the nice pencil or pen and ink drawings on them. So are those your seeds that you guys are starting to sell?
We have our own seed line. We have over 100 varieties of seed, and we also sell our own dahlia tubers. We bring in bulbs from Holland, our favorite varieties. So this is our second year doing that, and then we'll be expanding. But there's certain varieties that we can't get our hands on, or there's just a world shortage, so there's no way to get them, or they're falling out of favor and the seed breeders are just going to drop the lines. So that's why we're trying to catch up to speed, so that we can start growing out a lot of these varieties here on our own farm, and then be able to hold those genetics and save those beauties from possible extinction.
Nice.
Yeah. So are
there different things you have to do to grow flowers for seed than your regular flowers that you grow to harvest?
This is going to be a complete, so normally in the field when we're growing them for cut flowers, you hardly ever see any color in the field. Like if you see a flower field full, you know there's a problem, because the farmer hasn't sold their product. I mean, they haven't sold their flowers. So normally the field is mostly green. So now we're going to have to let all of the flowers blow out and be pollinated and set seed instead of harvesting them. So that's going to be really hard to get used to. And then you have to do certain isolation distances. So sweet peas don't. Yeah, sweet peas don't need a ton of separation, so between 10 and 15 feet, but some varieties need 300 feet, or some of them need a quarter of a mile. And so we're trying to find that information, which really doesn't exist. I mean, I've been researching and calling and getting in touch with everyone I can, but there's really not a lot of information around seed saving for flowers specifically. There's tons of information about vegetables. So I think we're going to be kind of working on this and kind of pioneering a whole new, starting to gather this information and make it available to others, which I'm really excited about.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about something maybe that didn't work so well this season or last season that maybe didn't go the way you expected, or like something that was disappointing or just turned out maybe different? Doesn't even have to be disappointing. Could have surprised you.
So this year we grew, we normally grow dinner plate dahlias. They're the big, beautiful, fat, amazing varieties that are so great for flower arranging. But here in Washington, it's pretty wet and moist, and the heads of them get damaged outside. So we grow them undercover. And we devoted a huge amount of our greenhouse space to dinner plate dahlias. And the cut flower crop was spectacular. I mean, it was just better than we'd ever had. But the problem was, when we went to dig those tubers, normally the clumps of tubers, you're going to get 5, 7, 10 tubers per clump when you dig them up. They were rotten. We had such a high percentage of loss because the greenhouses were hot and humid. And so while the flowers seemed to do pretty well inside, the tubers were awful. So we now know that if we want to grow them for tubers and to save more tubers out of them, don't plant them in the hoop houses. So that was a hard lesson learned. I mean, we lost a good, I'd say 25% of our tubers that were planted in the hoop houses to rot.
Oh, and they, and those were ones you were planting just for the tubers specifically, like you would let them go, no, or did we were, you still get to harvest the flowers?
We still harvested the flowers, but normally we're increasing our stock. So our stock was just, we didn't get to increase like we expected. So that, I mean, that was for us, knowing as much as we do about flowers, that was a pretty big failure. But every year we blow it on a lot of levels, and that's really where I feel like we learn the most, but it's the most painful way to learn, you know, to just make big mistakes. But it's part of growing. It's part of gardening.
Mm-hmm. It's part of any business, I think, too.
Yeah.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Do you want to learn how to improve the quality of your soil while maximizing crop yields? Do you want to learn how to create a small market garden that can feed 200 families and create a generous income? Have you ever wondered how to do manual labor that's pleasant, lucrative, and very much in keeping with a healthy lifestyle? Well, these are things that you'll learn if you get a copy of J.M. Fortier's awesome book, The Market Gardener, from Amazon. You can do that by simply going to our website at www.organicgardenerpodcast.com. Right on the homepage, there's a link to books that have been recommended on the Organic Gardener podcast. This book was first recommended by Joyce Pinson from Friends Drift In. Mike and I have read it several times. I interviewed G. Martin Fortier, and he's just so wonderful. So you can get a copy of this book and support the Organic Gardener podcast at the same time by simply going to organicgardenerpodcast.com, click on the recommended books page, and you can order this book or any other book from Amazon or tools or anything you might like, and support the Organic Gardener podcast. Thanks.
Okay. Well, so this is the part where I would say, let's get to the root of things. And I'll ask you like some quicker kind of like, it's like the lightning round, I guess, on other shows. So, okay. Do you have a least favorite activity in the garden? Like, something you kind of got to force yourself to get out there and do?
I hate weeding. I absolutely despise it. And I procrastinate like crazy.
And that just makes it worse, right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. And then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
My favorite thing would definitely be harvesting. I mean, especially at dusk when the light is beautiful and you're out there and nobody's around and the tractors are in the background and, you know, just strolling through the field picking. That's pretty amazing.
Okay. So how many flowers do you guys like harvest a day? And like, I was listening to the Martha Stewart interview where you were talking about growing like thousands of sunflowers. Like my first year of my podcast, my challenge for myself was to grow 750 sunflowers, and that seemed huge. And then I realized like if I was really going to grow sunflowers, I'd have to grow like 750 a week for like as many weeks as I could, like for like 10 or 12 weeks.
Yeah, like, exactly.
How many flowers do you guys grow? And like how long does it take you to harvest?
We're harvesting like full tilt at least 3.5 days a week. And that's, I mean, we are fast too. So on average, when we're picking dahlias, we pick dahlias twice a week. We're picking between 400 and 550 bunches at a time. And a bunch has 5 stems in it. So that's like an average dahlia harvest during the peak season. And the last time, we haven't been growing sunflowers in the last couple of years because it takes so much space. But the last time we planted sunflowers, we did about 30, 35,000 that year.
Oh my goodness.
I know. But
in,
you know,
in your little 2 acres?
Exactly. Because we turn and burn. That's our motto. So when something's done, we till it in and we replant the bed. So we try to get as many crops out of a single bed as we possibly can.
So I always plant like the first, I always try to get my sunflowers in by April 22nd, by Earth Day. Like, when do you start planting some, I guess if you're not planting them anymore, but like, when do you know?
Yeah, normally sunflowers, I go right about our last frost, which is about the 25th of April, and then plant them every single week until usually like mid-July is about as far as we can go with the fast flowering sunflowers to get them to bloom before the fall frost.
Okay. I guess you're not as worried about them going to seed as that. Like, I always think, like, I want them to go to seed. I've pretty much decided that I'm sticking with sunflowers for bird seed.
They're fantastic.
I don't know if I have what it takes to be a cut flower farmer. There was a day where I was dreaming about it, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty hard work.
It is, and I don't know, maybe if, like, I don't know, if you did it full time all the time and you had it more together than I do, but it sure looks beautiful, and but I don't know. Anyway, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Well, you reap what you sow, or you get back what you put in. So really, anytime, I've learned this year in and year out, over and over again in the garden, if I ever cut corners, if I don't prepare a bed properly, you know, with enough compost and fertilizer, if I take something that's stressed and I transplant it anyway, like anytime I try to get away with something, it always bites me in the butt later. Like, I have never been able to pull one over on nature. So really, the more generous and abundant, the more you can do things, like do your best, the more you're rewarded, and the more you cut corners. I always feel like, at least for me, it never works out.
I think that's great advice, and you certainly know what you're doing, so I think that's good advice for everyone to follow. And certainly, a major theme on my show has been soil health, and so I'm sure what you're saying about, like, if you don't put the best compost and take your time to get that bed ready in the beginning, that's gotta follow through. What Absolutely. About pests? Have you had problems with pets? Like, you got any tips for pests? Because that's been a big challenge. I know my listeners, the two biggest things are having time, and then the next one, pest has been a big problem.
Yeah, so here because I would say that earwigs and slugs are a really big pest for us. Like, we're not plagued with Japanese beetles or anything, which is amazing. But the slugs, because it's so damp, they just get in and ruin all your baby crops, all your baby plants. And then the earwigs, they come out at night and they bite big holes in our flowers. So there's this product, and it's certified organic. It's safe for pets and kids. It's called Sluggo Plus. And it works on both of them. And I buy it by, like, the big old bag. That is, like, my miracle solution for both of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
To check that out. What's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
I'd say my, the little Japanese weeding hoe, you know, that it's like angled and really sharp. That is my favorite, because I hate to weed. So when I'm going to do it, I want it to be as enjoyable as possible. And I feel like I can go really fast when I use it.
Okay, cool. So where are your biggest, I don't know. My husband makes it seem like weeding is like a piece of cake, and he's usually on top of it. I always feel like we don't get a lot of weeds at my place, but, like, where do you get the most weeds? Just in between your rows, or?
Yeah, we get, well, in our beds too, because, you know how, I mean, you guys are probably more dry, but we're constantly moist. And so just with a little bit of heat and moisture, boom, everything germinates. So we use a lot of landscape fabric to keep weeds down in our pathways and also over our growing beds. And we burn holes in the fabric so that we can plant through it. But, I mean, gosh, weeds are a constant problem here for us because everything is so moist and just wants to grow.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I usually ask about a favorite recipe that you like to cook from the garden. I don't know. Do you have, like, a favorite flower arrangement?
One of my favorite things to do is actually to incorporate food into bouquets. And so I love to go pick the little currant, tomatoes, or like the little tiny pear tomatoes on the vine, and herbs that have gone to seed, and even green beans on the stem. They look so cool tumbling out of the side of a bouquet, and it really gets people talking at the table, because most people who don't even pay attention to flowers, they notice the green beans or the little bit of the unripe raspberries or any of those edibles in there. It's a real conversation starter.
Oh, nice. That was perfect. How about a favorite internet resource besides your blog? Because we all know your blog is amazing, full of valuable information for people that want to know how to grow flowers better.
My favorite, you know, the blog or website that I stalk the most often, there's a grower and she owns a seed company in England named Sarah Raven. She has the most informative website with so many resources and videos and how-tos and articles that she's written. I feel like I could spend weeks on there and not even get to the bottom of it. So, and the photography is stunning. Everything that she says to do and recommends, it works. So Sarah Raven is my favorite, like, go-to source for both inspiration and information.
Cool. All right. We'll have to check that out. You know what I was going to say about your blog is I saw you have the most amazing garden journal that came out this year too. Is that the first time you've had a garden journal like that come
yes.
out?
Yes. Yep.
Wow,
yeah,
what a
I
big
love
year
it.
For you.
It's what I've always wanted to have for myself. And so we finally like created the what we feel like is the perfect garden journal. Next year we'll add a little pocket for plant tags and stuff, but it was our first try and it was really exciting.
I know. It just looks fantastic. I love it. What about a favorite reading material? Do you have like a favorite book or magazine or anything to recommend?
My new favorite book, Ariella Shazar. She is a floral designer in New York and just the most lovely person. And her book called The Flower Workshop came out last year. It is one of the most beautiful books I've ever had. And I collect books. So this thing, I mean, it feels like your heart gets ripped out and stomped on in the very best way. Like it is so stunning. And she has so many flower arrangements and such great stories. And it's one of my favorites. I just keep going back to it over and over again.
Cool. So how about, do you have any business advice for listeners if they wanted to get started in the industry and learn how to maybe sell some extra flowers? Maybe they're already a vegetable farmer or somebody who's like me that thought about trying to sell flowers.
Yeah, I would say that at least from what I've found, and this goes across any industry, sharing your story and sharing yourself. We call it being the face of your business, but really most of the time we all want to hide behind the product that we make or we sell, you know, that we grow. Like we'll hide behind the flowers or hide behind the produce. But really, if you can step out from behind what you're creating and actually show up so that customers can connect with you and get to know you and get to know why you're doing what you're doing and really see the passion behind your business, I've found that across the board, it is the most connecting and ultimately sets you apart from like the people that are successful or not. I find the people that are the most successful are the ones that share their story.
Awesome. Are you a millennial?
When would that be?
I think they're born from 1980 to 1990.
Yeah, I was born in 80.
You were? Yeah. Yep. Another rock star millennial. I am so like, I've been having this little millennial thing this like early winter with people because like so many people diss the millennials and the millennials I get to interview are the best people and I just love them. So just another rock star millennial out there. You could just tell. Cool. My stepdaughter was born in 1982, and that's what I always say. I mean, she's one of the hardest working people I've ever met, too. Both of my stepdaughters are, and so I love it. Okay, ready for my final question?
I'm ready.
If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, I feel like we at home gardeners, can actually make the biggest difference by dropping the chemicals, just stop using chemicals in your garden altogether, start feeding your soil, and then growing more beautiful things, food for the pollinators, a environment for your grandchildren, you know, just creating these beautiful little oases in our own backyards.
That was beautiful. That's a big part of my husband and my's like you know, plans to help people grow their own little organic oasis. And just, he worries so much about his grandkids and just like they're still being a planet for us to have. And I don't know, I think I get so much inspired from my guests and just my listeners, and I'm a little more optimistic, but
right,
you know, I just think that's perfect. How about just like a little inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Yeah, I don't have a quote, but my favorite, I would say my own motto is, don't worry about making mistakes. Just get your hands in there and get dirty. You'll learn the most by making mistakes and trying things. And so often what doesn't work is actually what teaches you the most. So just get in there and try. And don't worry about killing plants, because you're going to kill a lot of them. So just make peace with that from the beginning.
That's awesome advice. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with your journey and your family. And we're super, so tell listeners, how do they pre-order your book? Well, just tell them, because if this comes out before March 7th, it'll be a miracle. And that's what day your book's launched, right?
Yep. So you can go to our website. It's floretteflowers.com. And I've got a big old blog full of all kinds of information. And there's a little button there that says book, and it will send you to all the different places that you can order copies. Amazon's got it for like $18. We have signed copies in our own shop. If you're in the UK, you can order it from Amazon UK. So there's all kinds of links there. But hopefully you'll find something good on our website that will help you grow more beautiful things.
Aww. Thank you so much, Erin, for coming on and sharing with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Green Future Growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book, or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.